Well, I don't think it's caused by a lack of good intentions. I don't think it's caused fundamentally by a lack of money. I think it's caused fundamentally by the way we go about doing business with Aboriginal people and their communities. I think we find it very easy to say that we should work with Aboriginal people and not on Aboriginal people. The Prime Minister said that three or four times in his Closing the Gap speech in February of this year. But actually turning that into an operating reality is the big difficulty. And that, I think, is where the focus needs to be. It needs to be not on policy so much, which is referred to by the Commission, but on how the business is being done. And unless you involve Aboriginal people in these things, unless they are part of the design and delivery of services, unless they are committed to them because they own it, we're going to go on having bad results.
Well, we might look a bit more at ways that work on the ground for governments and Aboriginal communities to work together. But maybe could you talk a bit more about why do you think government is consistently behaving this way when it knows it's not effective?
Well, it's not behaving this way because people are evil. It's behaving this way because we live in a democracy where the rule of law applies, where Parliament controls appropriations, and where money is given to public servants not to do good, but to do what the program requires. So the Westminster system of government, which we have, serves most people pretty well. It serves me well, it serves all my family well, it serves all my friends well. It's less advantageous to people who are in a situation of disadvantage, Aboriginal or non-Aboriginal alike, because wicked problems, things like long-term unemployment, things like lack of education, things like domestic violence, those things do not admit to a departmental solution. They require a ground-up solution. They require the people whose lives you're trying to improve being involved in that. You can't educate a child against his or her will. You can't employ someone against their will. You can't stop domestic violence by just shouting stop. You actually have to engage with people. And that's the thing that government is not structured to do very well. And that's the thing we've got to focus on.
So I'm really interested in what that would actually be like for the community and the government to really change its approach. Would we have to kind of, as citizens, think about letting go of control, think about letting go of oversight? For example, this Productivity Commission report made a point of saying very few Indigenous programs are actually evaluated. Would we have to give up on evaluation? How,
No.
as citizens, would we be able to help that happen?
There must be evaluation and there must be accountability. You can't take money from taxpayers and hand it out without there being accountability for the way it is spent. The question is, what are you accountable for? And instead of just being accountable in a box-ticking way, which is the classic way, which has nothing to do with what the results of the expenditure are, you have to become accountable, I think, for the way you go about the business. If, as the Prime Minister says, and I happen to agree with him on this, you must work with people, then people must be accountable for working with people. In other words, that becomes part of their accountability structure. So there's a lot of work being done on this, and in my view, there are solutions. But in no way would I argue that there must, you know, that you don't have a system of accountability. What I'd say is that you're being accountable for the wrong things, and box-ticking exercises are pathetic.
Now, across your experience working in this area, have you seen some successful examples of where Indigenous communities are able to, I guess, be self-determining and make their own decisions, and that's led to some success?
I've been very impressed by a recent example, and I'm talking here about an organisation that I happen to be patron of rather recently, along with a very fine traditional man called Mooki Taylor. It's an organisation called KJ in the East Pilbara of Western Australia. These people have native title over an area the size of England. There's a quite small group of people living in very scattered communities. They've now had a leadership program for some time, which has very much been shaped by them. And that's been an outstanding success where essentially you started the program without really knowing what the result might be, but which gave them a chance to participate and to learn from what they were doing. And I must say, when I spent time in Melbourne, when I spent time in southern Western Australia with a group of desert Aboriginal people, very much traditional Aboriginal people as we would see them, people with very limited language skills, and seeing the confidence with which they faced boardrooms in Melbourne, big public audiences in Melbourne, groups of community people in Western Australia, I saw transformation in action. Now, I think that's been a very expensive program. It's been a program which has largely been funded by the private sector, by NGOs and by BHP. And so it's had the flexibility which government programs don't have. Are they accountable? Yes, they're accountable for the results they are producing, for the way they go about working with people, not simply bossing them around. And in my view, it's a very, you know, a very powerful example of showing that if Aboriginal people feel they own what is happening, that it's giving them confidence in themselves and a capacity, then a lot has changed. That program, the program which includes a lot of work on country, some of which is subsidised by government, by the way, the Caring for Country programs, has been independently evaluated by Social Ventures Australia. And I'm giving you the figures from memory, but I think the total investment has been $18 million. And the total benefits are, I think, around $50 million. And those benefits include improvements in education, less crime, less drinking, less violence, less a series of problems, and people being engaged in productive enterprise, namely caring for country, as well as personal and community development. So, yes, I think there are successful working examples. What I see much more frequently, though, are externally imposed programs with detailed requirements being put on Aboriginal people, essentially a thumb being put on Aboriginal people, essentially Aboriginal people being told, go and jump through that hoop or you will not get any money. And they don't work. They simply estrange people, they alienate people, and they result in the sort of results the Productivity Commission has talked about. The other caution I'd want to make about the Productivity Commission report is this, and to some extent, and I haven't read the report, I've only seen the initial comments on it. It's really important to get beyond the overall national statistics, because the statistics vary very widely from place to place. And if I can give you a Canadian example, suicide among Indigenous people in Canada is a very big problem. Work that I've seen done there suggests that there are quite a lot of Indigenous communities where there's no suicide. There are other Indigenous communities where there are horrendous rates of suicide. The difference between those where there is no suicide and where there is suicide seems to be linked to where you have greater levels of native autonomy. The same principle applies. If people feel they're in charge of their lives, if people have meaningful, purposeful lives, then they're less likely to be suicidal. It seems pretty obvious to me. So I'm a great believer that we have to be prepared to build out from the community instead of building onto the community. And the other final point I'd make is that we should never underestimate the vital importance of culture. The people that I'm very happily associated with in the Western Desert, the Central Desert, are people for whom their culture is deeply significant. Their connection to country is very deep and strong. And if out of that activities develop, there's no problem. All around the desert that I've seen, caring for country programs, working on country, is the best bridge between where people are now and where they might need to be in the future. And I think they are transformational programs, and I know that KJ and the people that work with them are going to be in Canberra again next week explaining what they're doing to public servants, explaining what they're doing to politicians. I'm looking forward to meeting with the Minister for the Environment, with Mooki Taylor, my Aboriginal co-patron, and having a chance to explain to him the transformational effects of what's happening there, Aboriginal-led work, work that fits in with their culture and work which fits in overall with the aspirations of government.
Yeah, South Australian Native Title Service is actually involved in one of those projects on the Gawler Ranges, and I just spoke to the worker last week on this show, and he really talked about the positive benefits of that, the real connection of traditional owners with the land and I guess with traditional knowledge and scientific knowledge. It's doing some really positive things there.
Can I just throw in something? I wish every Aboriginal person, and indeed every Australian, could read Bill Gammage's book. I think it's The World's Biggest Estate, it's called. And it's a detailed description of Aboriginal land management pre-settlement, which explains why almost every explorer seems to record in his journal, the initial European explorers, the land is like a gentleman's park. the land management in Australia by Aboriginal communities was so sophisticated, it was so attuned to getting the maximum productivity from the country, it's a lesson for modern Australia. And I think Aboriginal people should feel incredibly proud of the way they manage this country, and it's not surprising that they're very anxious to get back on country and to restore it to a decent condition.
Yeah, because particularly, I guess, in other places too, but in the Gawler Ranges, the issues they were talking about dealing with were related to modern Australia and things we've brought in, like feral cats. And
sure.
So really interesting area. So I'm also interested, you were the Vice President of the Native Title Tribunal.
Deputy Chair, along with the Honourable Chris Sumner, who I saw here in Western Australia, in South Australia last night, and who's the patron, one of the patrons of Reconciliation South Australia.
Great. Well, because of that background, I'm interested in your views on the role of Native Title in recognition and reconciliation, because Native Title is fundamentally about reconciliation, I think. As you know, a lot of Australia now is post-determination. A lot of Aboriginal communities, Aboriginal sure. nations have Native Title over their land. What kind of hope do you think that holds for Aboriginal communities to be able to be more self-determined? And what role should government play with those new communities?
Well, I mean, one of the ironies of Native Title is that it provided a wonderful opportunity for government to integrate their negotiating on Native Title with their ambitions to involve Aboriginal people in the social and economic life of the country. But a lot of the negotiations were quite barren in that state governments tried to take any useful economic content out of Native Title. But now that all that's done, or a lot of it's done, and we're living in a post-determination era, certainly in Western Australia over much of the state, there are fantastic opportunities which were never there before for Aboriginal people. And to take an example, in the southwest of Western Australia, the Noongar people, who are probably the most dispossessed, dispersed group, the people who are most put upon, whose children were taken away, who were subject to intense bureaucratic control from 1905 through to the 1970s. We did everything possible we could to the Noongar people to destroy their society. They had a successful Native Title case in Perth. That led the government to the negotiating table, and they have negotiated a total settlement over the southwest of Western Australia. It's an amazing agreement that has flowed out of Native Title rights in an area where most Native Title had been extinguished. And if you look at that agreement, it provides for access to land, it provides for certain rights to land, it involves involvement in the conservation estate, it involves substantial payments from the state to a large fund for the Noongars, it involves the support for administrative arrangements for the Noongars in their different tribal groups. It's an amazing outcome. It is, in my view, a treaty. It's an agreement between the state of Western Australia and the governments of the Noongar people. In British Columbia, you would call it the Noongar Treaty. In Australia, that would cause a panic. So it's called the Southwest Land Agreement, and that's fine, because it's the substance that matters. Those people who are at the absolute dispossessed end of the spectrum in terms of Native Title have been able to turn that into a really substantial outcome for their people. And I think they have done a fantastic job. Glenn Kelly led that. He was supported by some other wonderful people, including the woman who's now the deputy, the co-chair of Reconciliation Western Australia, Carol. She's a wonderful person who was a good part of that team. Native Title is the beginning of a negotiation. Essentially, if people say, I want treaty, this is your opportunity to make agreements with government governing the exercise of your rights, but getting all sorts of collateral issues dealt with at the same time. I think the opportunities are huge, and could I ask Aboriginal people to celebrate the wins they've had? I mean, Mabo was fought for 10 years. It overturned decades, indeed over 100 years of domestic law. It was a huge victory. It resulted in the Native Title Act. It was a very difficult thing to implement, as you would know, and as Aboriginal people complained to me in South Australia about how difficult it was. But the outcome is that Aboriginal nations are defined, Aboriginal nations are at the table, and I noticed that the South Australian government is trying to set up regional authorities. these are an opportunity. Look at what the Noongars have done. Look at what's been done elsewhere. You can turn this into a decent future where Aboriginal people are in charge of their lives.